Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
Good morning.
Morning, Russell.
Hey, Rusky.
How are you guys?
How are you, dude?
I'm fucking tired.
I can imagine.
Oh, my God. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping in to our lovely video store. So we've got ourselves a G-Force with us today.
Yo.
We're not working at the Bioscope. You are an editor.
Correct.
And you are also very much the producer of this show.
Cool.
Which is a very important part.
Wow. I'll take the credits.
No, you must. You must. We've got Gaddy, who, when not working at the video store, is a member of Short Straw with me.
Mm-hmm.
You are also your own musician. You call yourself Adventure Man. And then you also make the most incredible sweets.
Yeah.
Oh.
Gaddle's Candy Company. Yes.
On sale at the Bioscope.
On sale at the Bioscope.
For sale.
For sale.
Not on sale.
And my name is Russell. When I'm not working at the video store, I'm the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. This is our Clerks Chat, where the three of us are going to talk shit about all the movies and the series that we're watching. Later this week, on Thursdays, the occasional Thursday, is a guest episode. This week, we have a guest.
Yeah.
We are going to have our friend Nick Hammond pop in.
Cool.
Nick Hammond is now helming the breakfast show on 5FM. Mm-hmm. He's been a staple in South African radio and is blossoming in all other avenues now. He's doing far more stuff on social media and becoming his own voice, doing a lot of really cool food stuff.
Okay.
Which I really appreciate. And he's doing a really good job and it's really taking off. So it'll be lovely to catch up with Nick. He was one of our first guests on the show.
Yes.
So now that we actually have listeners, we are going to go back to one or two of those good friends and early guests to check in with them again.
Nice.
Because if you are a customer at the video store, you're going to come a few times.
Yeah.
It's not just a once-off deal. So that'll be Nick Hammond will pop in on Thursday. And so, it should be a good episode.
Nice.
I almost thought we wouldn't be able to open up today.
Yeah.
I landed back in South Africa this morning, but there was a chance I wasn't going to make it.
Yes.
And we'll get into it. I was in Italy.
Italia.
Yesterday. for those who've been following, the idea was that I went away with my family to Rome and Sicily. I spoke in the one episode with Pitti. About the fact that I forced my niece and nephew to watch Gladiator.
Yes.
Ahead of our trip to Rome, so that when we were in the Colosseum, they could imagine Russell Crowe in his sort of more supple, sylph-like
prime Crowe,
prime Crowe body. and it was glorious. It was hot. It was disorganized. It was chaotic. but I'm here.
Nice.
But on the way back, my first flight was delayed.
Where did you go via?
So we'd spent a few days in Sicily, the little hot as fuck island of Sicily. And upon driving to the airport, we got notified that our flight was delayed by an hour.
Right.
We only had an hour to change in Zurich.
Right.
So now we were fucked.
Yes.
But then it came down to having about 20 minutes to move to the airport, which is basically impossible.
Yes.
But we started speaking to the air hostesses on the flight to go, what are our options?
Yes.
And so they organized it.
Oh, cool.
And because it's a Swiss Air flight, they don't want to put you up and spend extra money.
Exactly.
And so it's in their interests to make it work. So there was this little angel at the bottom of the stairs with a little sign and a high-vis vest that said Johannesburg. And we went on this like little trip through the airport, a little secret way.
Okay.
Like on the ground, so not in the main terminal, is like a little passport control
that's
dedicated just for people like us. where this car drove up. We got our passport stamped.
Right.
Drove us to the tarmac. I felt like a VIP. But it was awesome.
Nice.
We haven't spoken about my
yes,
trip.
I was about to say, Gad, you were also in Europe. You're looking quite tanned. Was that from your European summer?
Maybe there was. It was very sunny. I was wearing my shorts like every day. It was great.
But we'll get into it. Let's get into our holidays, because I also want to talk about the movies that I watched on the plane.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of those people who secretly like long flights because I get to watch lots of movies.
Nice.
So I watched a lot, but I think we'll maybe kick things off with a Hey, Did You Guys See?
Cool.
A little round of that.
Hey, did you guys see Ted Lasso's coming back for season 4?
Did see that. It's very interesting.
I didn't know that.
I haven't actually finished season 3 because halfway through watching it with Jess, she's like, no, I want to go back and watch season 1 and 2. And that hasn't happened.
Right.
So I haven't finished season 3, but apparently they wrap it up quite nicely.
They very much do. I was there from the ground floor for the whole of Ted Lasso. It is the most lovable, endearing, funny, smart.
Mm.
It's even got like a couple of little Easter egg, like little gems for the film lovers.
Right.
You can clearly see, although it's a sports show, it is made by lovers of film.
Yes.
Well, the guy who plays Roy Kent is a film buff and a writer on the show.
Exactly.
So he throws all those things in.
Yeah, and you can see it. So there's little gems for people like us.
Right.
It's a beautiful show.
Mm.
It's a beautiful crossover because it is an American who gets hired to look after a British soccer team.
Yes.
In the expectation that this could fail.
Mm.
A woman is given a soccer team in her divorce, hates her husband, and so wants to see it fail, so hires this American coach.
Right.
Who turns out to be lovable, and everybody loves him.
Yes.
It's on Apple TV Plus, and it took the world by storm. It won a whole bunch of Emmys, and it wrapped up perfectly.
Okay.
So I think it's a money grab. Let's see.
Yeah.
Speaking of money grabs,
yeah.
Hey, did you guys see Oasis are reunited?
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, I was never the biggest Oasis fan, but
yeah, same.
That's cool for everyone who likes
them,
I guess.
Sure, but I mean, here's two brothers that then went on to do their own things that were never as successful.
Mm.
And the only thing stopping them from being the biggest, greatest band in the world was their own personal drama.
Yeah, themselves.
I think one of the funniest stories I've ever heard is there was some major, major show. It was like a huge packed out stadium show or whatever. And then on the day, Liam's like, no, I'm not going to do
it.
Yes. And then so Noel had to sing all of Liam's parts.
Yeah.
But Liam was in the audience like jeering at
him. Like heckling him.
Heckling him.
I think it was an MTV Live thing, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it was like a pretty important filmed show.
Yes.
So ridiculous.
It's wild.
I mean, they just are two Okies that shouldn't have so much money and power, but they do. But yeah, the success of them really was the fact that it's such easy sing-along music.
Yeah.
There's something amazing about the simplicity of Oasis.
Mm.
And I think that was always its strength, and that it's sort of, you know, there's that TV show on Netflix called This Is Pop.
Right.
And there's one episode dedicated to why the Scandinavians, and in specifically the Swedish,
mm-hmm.
are so good at writing pop songs.
Okay.
And there's some reasons. There's some history. There's some folklore. There's a tradition of certain songwriting.
Right.
There's a culture of it. There were all these sort of reasons why the Swedish tend to be very good at writing catchy pop songs.
Okay.
And it makes sense that out of this culture of sing along at the football game, you know, this kind of pub song stuff, that these guys wrote these very simple like pub songs.
Yes.
Like Wonderwall is not a challenge in terms of vocal range or anything ridiculous. It's very simple songs.
Yeah.
For me, when I started watching MTV, I don't know why, it was always Oasis versus Blur, and almost like couldn't like both.
Well, that also comes up in, I think, This Is Pop as well. There was a big moment where it was a little bit like the musical version of Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Right.
Where the media caught on to the fact that Blur were releasing a song on the same day as Oasis, and so then it became, the media built it up as it was called the Battle of Britain or the Battle of the...
It was Country House, Blurted Country House, and then I can't remember the Oasis song. Yeah. No but idea. Everyone in that band hates Country House, which is so funny.
and the result was, I think, Blur sold more albums.
Okay.
But in the, Oasis in that week. Ultimately won. So the diagnosis of that day was Blur won the race, but lost the
marathon.
There was some terminology.
Because won. Yeah.
In my memory, I'm like, no, Blur, the most popular band. And then you go check on Spotify and then they just blow Blur's numbers like out of the water.
Right.
Like the amount of people that still listen to Oasis.
Yeah, that was the.
I still prefer Blur.
Okay, well, those were mine.
Cool.
Do you have another one, Graham?
I have several.
Okay.
So, hey, did you guys see this controversy, if you will, around the Megalopolis trailer?
No, tell me
okay,
about
so
it.
Okay, so Megalopolis is the new Francis Ford Coppola film.
Okay.
So this is the guy who did The Godfather, Apocalypse Now. You know, he was for a while. He's kind of stepped away and he hasn't made anything in quite a long time. But this is his new self-funded film. He sold like a big chunk of his wine farm for like $120 million to make this film.
Got Adam Driver.
Yeah.
Premiered at Cannes.
With the worst haircut I've ever seen.
Yeah. His bowl cut. But like you said, it has been showing at festivals and that sort of thing. And the response to it has been kind of mixed.
Yeah.
It hasn't been like particularly positive. But now I think Lionsgate have picked up the distribution rights in the US. Yeah. And they put out this trailer that has all these negative review quotes in them.
From his other movies,
yeah. Right? So it's like negative reviews for The Godfather and Apocalypse Now and that sort of thing. Basically saying like, hey, critics are saying this new movie's bad, but they also said his old movies are bad and they're classics now.
Interesting.
But all the reviews are fake.
Oh.
They've made up quotes essentially. And what's like problematic about it is that they've attributed them to actual film critics.
Oh.
So making them say things
real.
That they... None of these quotes aren't real. So they've attributed them to like actual film critics, making it seem like they said these things, but it's all just made up.
Why would they make such a big blunder?
So what I think probably happened is someone involved in the campaign went to ChatGPT or whatever
and just got it wrong.
Find me negative reviews for Francis Ford Coppola films, and then the AI hallucinated and made a bunch of shit up and no one bothered to check.
Wild.
Yeah.
No, but that's gotten them off to a bad start.
Very bad start.
And it's silly because it's completely outside of the film itself.
Yes. But I think it is this response to the fact that people are saying it's interesting, but it's not very good. And now the studio is trying to say, well, but all these film critics are wrong because they said his other movies are bad as well. But they never did.
Interesting. Hey, did you guys see that Jack Black and Paul Rudd, was this on your list?
This was one of mine.
Are going to do a remake of Anaconda,
yes.
But it's going to be about them trying to make the Anaconda film.
Yeah, so apparently the plot is that they're fans of the original Anaconda.
Which is such a great
from
movie.
Back in the day, and now they're trying to remake it, and they wind up in an Anaconda situation.
Speak and rewind
that is.
With a higher budget.
Yeah.
Better special effects.
Okay, so upon trying to remake it, they actually find themselves in a real version of the movie. Yeah.
Like Speak and Rewind meets Tropic Thunder. Almost.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly.
I think Anaconda could make such a good cheesy movie night.
Exactly, yeah.
At the Bioscope.
Well, yes. Starring Jack Black. Wait, yeah. wait.
I mean, just that moment when you see John Voight,
yes.
Like, when he gets chundered out and then he winks at
like,
her.
Winks at Jennifer Lopez. But it, like, they have this opportunity here. I wonder how meta this is going to get.
Yeah.
Like, you could have, like, Owen Wilson or, like, Eric Stoltz in it as themselves.
Yeah.
Like, being dragged along into the situation.
Yeah.
And now they made Anaconda and now they're in a real Anaconda scenario, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
Like that could be fun.
When I saw that, I was like, that sounds genius.
Yeah.
Wasn't Anaconda like the big joke on ETV? That was always
yes.
Like the Sunday
it was on
night
it
movie.
Like all the time on ETV.
And then somebody was like, well, the ratings keep coming in, so let's just keep playing it.
And I'm pretty sure they made like a big, this is the last time we'll be showing Anaconda as a Sunday night movie.
Oh, that's funny. Were there any others that you guys had?
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Secret Level?
No. What is that?
So Secret Level is a new series from the same people who made Love, Death, and Robots.
Nice.
So Tim Miller and Blur Studios.
Also okay. anthologies.
It's also an anthology series.
Also but like, animated.
Also animated. So like all the episodes in Love, Death and Robots are based on sci-fi short stories.
Okay.
These one, each one is based on a video game.
Okay.
Like a known video game.
Mostly, yeah. They're kind of like pulling more obscure ones, but for the most part, they're more recognizable stuff.
What's it called?
It's called Secret Level.
Secret Level.
It's a Prime series.
Okay. Because Love, Death and Robots December. Was...
Netflix. Yeah.
I loved Love, Death and Robots. I thought it was cool.
It was really cool, especially the first season.
Yeah, yeah. The one about how the yogurt took over.
I loved that one, dude.
It's so good.
It was so funny.
Definitely saw a few. I haven't seen season two for sure. Okay.
There's three seasons, I think.
Some of them are just the most stunning animation you've ever seen in your life.
Yes.
That weird dancing woman in the water.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of almost like Indian-looking woman in the water was so cool. That big... a big giant that washed up on the shore.
That was really interesting. Yeah,
visually was stunning. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, I really like them. Yeah, but each one of these is also again they look really nice, and it looks like they're doing like really unusual things. Like there's a Pac-Man one, but it's not Pac-Man in the way you would expect. Like they're making like the ghosts into like characters and that sort of thing. So it's going to be kind of interesting.
Lovely.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any more?
Did you guys see they canceled the Acolyte?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see that coming?
Yes, frankly.
Like, yeah, but it still makes me sad. It's like...
Yes.
Did it not resolve itself?
I thought the show ended up really cool. It got very much sucked up by this idea of the woke agenda and haters and people who really didn't want to like it and didn't give it a chance.
Yeah.
And most people who critiqued it didn't even watch it. But they teased... this one character, Darth Plagueis, who is the Emperor's master, who he kind of talks about to Anakin in, I think, episode two.
Yeah, three.
That would have been an amazing thing to explore in the second season.
Maybe it could be its own season or its own show.
Maybe. But my like concern here now is like the only thing that's been popular in Star Wars that people haven't like, you know, the Star Wars fans who love Star Wars so much that they hate Star Wars, is anything set like 5 years before A New Hope or 5 years after Return of the Jedi is like the only area they're ever going to explore in Star Wars again, because everything else just gets shit on by.
Yeah. I was shocked to hear because...
Insufferable fans.
Andor, which I think is, never mind the best Star Wars, like the best TV that you'll ever watch, was known for getting really, really low numbers viewership. Acolyte was like half of what Andor got, and I'm like,
I think the difference is Andor was very well reviewed, like critically it was received very well.
Yeah.
And apparently originally it was supposed to be like five seasons or something.
Yeah.
But because the viewership was low, that season two is going to be the like end of it.
So they're doing four arcs of three episodes.
Yes, each one is jumping forward in time.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
This is for Andor.
Yeah.
So okay. next,
I assume it'll basically catch up to like the beginning of Rogue One.
I've been seeing quotes saying that Andor season two is going to change the way you think of Rogue One, which is okay.
Yes.
Okay. Before we get too far down this Star Wars rabbit hole, any other things did you guys see?
I'm all out.
Cool.
Did you guys see that Lost is available to stream on Netflix?
TV show, the famous TV show.
It's been on Disney Plus.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I never got on that.
I loved
Such
Lost.
A good show.
Did you watch it right till the end?
Yeah.
I've seen it twice right to the end.
Yes.
Really? Hey?
Yeah. Probably like two and a half times, yeah.
Mm.
And
was the, because the ending was a sort of famous...
I think it all hinges on how you interpret that very last episode.
Yes.
Because, I mean... if you're not going to watch it, the whole thing hinges around like them like being alive or not.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some, they had to add some footage in to make the ending not so bleak. I was listening on that podcast that I sent you guys.
Yeah.
That basically they needed something a bit more uplifting, and they showed like scenes of the plane on the beach, and then people were like, oh no, they were all dead. So the show's stupid. So for a lot of people, that's how they interpreted it. And like they were like, I just wasted 6 years of my life. But like for me, it just all made sense.
Yeah.
It was tied up so nicely. They were like, oh, they're just making it up as they go along. But I mean, that's writing
fiction.
Is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. the idea was that a bunch of people crash landed on an island.
Yeah.
And then it was all about them living on the island, and some strange shit happened.
It's a weird fucking island.
So like stuff's happening on the island, but at the same time, half of each episode is dedicated to flashbacks of those characters.
Yeah.
And you start to see like why those specific people on the island and how they were linked before. Mm. Okay. And it's crazy.
So was the big reveal the fact that they were dead?
I think that's an interpretation of it, that they were in like some sort of purgatory or whatever.
But apparently that's not the case and it all happened.
Yes.
And they did split into like these kind of alternate universes.
Yes, there was one season where like the flashback, so to speak, were like happening in like an alternate time. And one season you realize right towards the end that they're flash forwards, they're not flashbacks.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff that you've been seeing is actually happening after they get off the island.
Because they get off the island and then they're like, no,
was
we
that
need
a big
to get...
deal for you at the time?
That was like, what the fuck?
Okay. I love that show so much.
All right. No, so it was definitely one to still sink your teeth into.
Yeah, I loved it.
Mm. All right. Can we talk about some of the movies I watched?
Let's do that.
I took great joy in watching The Boys on the Boat.
Okay.
That was a film that our good friend Leon Fanira said was really good.
Okay.
I don't know where he caught it, and he was saying that would be such a good Bioscope film, but
right. It
never came to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an American story, so it is set around the 1930s,
okay. And
it follows a bunch of young student men that are part of the University of Washington, and they're quite poor. It's during the Great Depression, and they start rowing. Because in the eyes of our main character, this is a way to actually get some employment, get some, you know, some lodging.
Yes.
And it's the true story of this sort of underdog team that goes to the Olympics.
Right.
The 1936 Olympics in Berlin.
I think that was the German one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that was when Hitler was still... you know, making his name. War hadn't quite broken out.
Yes. He was there at the Olympics.
The success of this rowing team. It's a very simple sports movie.
Yes.
That's beautifully made. It's directed by George Clooney.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which
he's
is
a good
one
director.
Of those,
not see that coming.
He is a good director. Mm. What else has he directed?
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Yeah, you know, Monuments Men.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked. It's a
so
sweet
he's very,
film.
He's very competent in that regard. Mm. I loved it. Straight up, good, happy, cheers.
Nice.
Then I watched Lisa Frankenstein.
Okay.
Which is like a little bit more of a teeny, like young adulty movie
okay.
I came to discover. And I realized that for the right person, most likely a woman.
Yes.
At the right time in your life, like this could be like your greatest movie. It is
be your Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, it could be. Is that what it was for you?
I haven't seen it. I can imagine.
No, but I'm saying Josie and the Pussycats was your like ultimate movie.
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny. For me, it was That Thing You Do.
Oh, right.
That was like a big one for me.
Yes.
That sort of set me on a course to be a musician.
Sure, Mean Girls was that movie for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Lisa Frankenstein is a very fantastical, silly, rompy, campy movie. It's set in the 80s, so it's definitely like a film director probably roughly our age.
Yes.
That's nostalgic to sort of their time.
It liked weird science.
Yeah, and it's definitely a play on that sort of fantastical 80s.
Okay.
So this young girl whose mom got killed.
Okay.
Is now living in a new town with her dad and the woman her dad is married.
Right.
So she's in this kind of new house. But there's this graveyard and the lightning strikes and she sort of wishes this old young guy, because she can only see his figurehead on the cemetery stone. and she sort of wishes him alive, and he comes alive as this zombie.
Right.
But he's missing a hand and he's missing an ear. And so over the course of the movie, they kill people and add hands to him and somehow make him look better and better. So he starts as this like real swamp character.
Right.
But over the course of the movie, for some strange reason, he becomes more and more like Cole Sprouse, who's the actor who plays him.
Yes.
You know, who's a little bit of a heartthrob for some girls, especially the girls that grew up with him as a little kid.
Yes.
And then he was on Riverdale.
Yeah.
And so he's been a little bit of a young teen, sort of 20-something heartthrob.
First time I've ever heard that name.
Cole Sprouse. Cole Sprouse was famously one half of the Sprouse twins who were used in like Big Daddy.
Yeah.
They were the little boy Ben in Friends. Then they had a TV show.
They had a Disney Channel TV show.
Yeah, it was called like The Sweet Life with Zach and Cody.
Yes.
They were very much the...
like the male Olsen twins.
The male Olsen twins, yeah. Oh. And they're handsome boys. Cole,
do they both still act now as adults?
Cole has done more.
Right.
Riverdale became a surprise hit. He was Jughead in Riverdale, which was the sort of serious...
Yeah.
Crimey, supernatural sort of reinterpretation of the Archie comic world, which is a big swing that really worked.
Still not as weird as some of the actual Archie comics.
Probably.
Archie versus Predator, that's a thing.
What?
Who wins that one?
I mean, I'd have no idea, but you can probably guess.
Probably Archie, I would hope.
Jughead would beat Predator.
Yeah. They really made
Archie
that.
Versus Predator is a real comic book.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, I think some of the things that are interesting about it, so it's really a bit silly, but it's made some lists of people going like, this is a new cult classic.
Okay, cool.
And so that's why I went in and was happy to watch it, because even though I knew it was... I was perhaps a little too old and a little too male for this.
Mm-hmm.
I could see how some people would think this is awesome.
Yes.
And how it could be like a modern classic, modern cult classic. It stars Catherine Newton. She's the main woman. She's Lisa. She was in Quantumania.
Oh, okay.
What was she in Quantumania?
She was the main daughter.
Paul Rudd's daughter.
Oh, the Paul Rudd's daughter.
The recast daughter.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. She was also in a very cute little indie film called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things.
I've seen that.
Hey?
Yeah.
A long time ago.
I've mentioned it on the show before.
Right.
Cool little Groundhog Day type concept. They sort of stuck in a time loop, but it's a very indie, little love movie.
Okay.
But this movie was written by a woman who's got arguably the coolest fucking name in the world. Her name is Diablo Cody.
Oh,
she did Juno.
She wrote Juno.
Okay.
She was an ex-stripper.
Exactly. She made her name for her. She made a name for herself. Being this kind of blogger, journalist who would write these accounts of what her life was like as a stripper.
Yeah.
That's what kind of got her originally noticed.
Yes.
So, yeah, there is a very like feminine take on it.
Okay.
It's quite strong in that sense. It's quite cheeky. It's quite fun. It's completely fantastical.
Cool.
It's
they're going to get a cinema release here.
I think that chance has come and gone.
Yeah.
Huh.
But maybe it could make for. Like a sort of Halloween-y once off or, you know, something fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Lisa Frankenstein, I don't know when or how, where it could be for South Africa. I saw it on a plane.
Okay.
But
get on a plane, people.
Get on a plane. Then I watched The Color Purple.
So this is the remake.
This is the musical.
Yes.
Now, I've never seen the original.
Okay.
It was made in the year I was born.
Okay, yes.
Which originally had Whoopi Goldberg.
It's a Spielberg movie. Never seen it.
And it had Oprah Winfrey in it. And it was based off the very famous book.
Oprah won an Oscar.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think she won an Oscar.
She was nominated. Yes.
She was
nominated. I was checking it up now.
Yeah.
It had a bunch of nominations. It didn't have any wins that I could tell.
But this was Spielberg's first like serious film. Like before that, he had made like Jaws and Indiana Jones and those sort of things.
He had made Amistad yet.
He hadn't made it
or Schindler's List or anything like
that. Yeah, so I find it really interesting that my first entry into the world of The Color Purple was through the musical.
Yeah.
But it certainly doesn't make it less serious and more credible and less important. It maybe, if anything, it could be more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Set in the South in the early 1900s, you got beautiful, like, sort of rhythm and blues, and the music's incredible. Okay. It's that real kind of like happy, clappy gospel stuff.
Okay.
So like the music, it makes perfect sense that this becomes a musical.
Okay.
Like we didn't need a Mean Girls musical. But Color Purple made sense because so much of that writing and that time was so entrenched in music.
Right.
You know, the juke joints. And the sounds of the South, and you know, the singing in these churches. I haven't been exposed to too much of it, but it reminds me a little bit of some of the books I read in English Lit,
right,
which were Toni Morrison books, where there was this kind of magical realism.
Okay,
but Color Purple is a, like, the premise of the whole story is deeply fucking traumatic.
Yeah.
So a musical actually helps you digest it, but. Had myself a good cry.
Okay.
Had myself a good cry.
Right.
Last time I cried on a plane, I was with Gad in what we called the Bing Bong moment.
Oh, okay.
When we both
synced
our watching of Inside Out. No, it is really good. I don't know whether musically it has any kind of big standout songs that are memorable, but they're still really great and good.
Right.
Everyone acted their fucking pants off in
Spielberg
this movie.
Didn't direct this, did he?
No. But it was Amblin Entertainment.
Yeah, I think he was an exec producer on it.
The guy who did direct it, I recognized his name.
I was about to say, I can't remember who it was, but I did recognize his name when it came up.
His name is Blitz Bazawule.
Yes.
I have met Blitz.
Oh, yes.
So he came to the Bioscope years ago,
because
he, if you look back in his the films that he's made, there's a film called The Burial of Kojo, which is this like very, very cool, incredibly awesome looking, quite artistic African film. And it was definitely at a time when the world was looking for something beautiful and authentic to come out of Africa, not a depressing sort of shit, you know, trauma story.
Yeah.
What about the sexy? What about the artistic? The finesse. And Burial of Kojo was one of those movies. And I think he knew another guy that we had a good relationship with at the Bioscope, a filmmaker called Akin Omotoso.
Okay.
Who spends his time, he was a Nigerian, but he spent most of his time in South Africa.
Right.
And he made a bunch of films in South Africa, Akin, before now going overseas. But I think it was through Akin that we got introduced to Blitz.
Right.
We met him, we screened these films, Burial of Kojo.
Yeah.
I got to know him. And how cool is it that he's now, you know, at the helm of this big.
Yes. You spoke about this on a guest episode with someone who also knew him. I can't remember which one it was, though.
Okay. Yes.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's definitely come up.
Yeah.
Just go listen to all our old episodes.
Yeah, do that. No, but I loved it. I loved Color Purple.
Nice.
It's a beautiful story of women finding their voice, finding their power, working together, but sort of standing up, fighting, and representation.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Cool.
It's lovely.
Nice.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed those.
Mm.
What did you watch on your European jaunt, Gad?
What was the new Mission Impossible Fallout?
Oh, Dead Reckoning.
Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Okay.
Which now
designed
just called
for
Dead
a small screen in front of, behind someone's head on terrible headphones.
Oh, shame. I'm sorry.
The way Tom Cruise wants you to watch it.
Yeah. No, that was cool.
Okay. But you had a very interesting European trip, Gad.
So, yeah, we had a whole tour booked, which got cancelled because of the UEFA Cup, which the booking guys didn't realize. Yes. So they're like, no, the bars want to play show soccer. So we pushed it a month later, which was crazy idea, but the tickets were still valid then. So we're like, oh, let's just go.
Okay.
So we went and basically busked around Berlin. I had a trolley pushing my very heavy keyboard.
This is Gad and his other band, Adventure Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my solo project, like stuff I write. And then Richard's drummer, percussionist. Mm. And yeah, so we just ended up doing these open mic nights and
That's cool.
It was interesting. I love Berlin. Public transport's amazing. Like, you can actually be a band and get around the city on like public transport tickets. Jeez. Which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I just found that in a week in Italy,
yeah,
that if anyone if anyone thinks that South Africa's bureaucracy is messy and complicated and nobody knows what's going on, go to Italy. It's the same thing. They've just been doing it for centuries longer than us.
But the end of the trip, I was going to visit my brother in Amsterdam. So I took a night train, leaving it like just after midnight, going from Berlin to Amsterdam.
Right.
So I was going to land at like 7 in the morning, and it got a bit complicated because my brother, he was coming from Canada, but his flight got delayed and he was only landing at 11.
Right.
So I'd arranged that I was going to take an Uber using my brother's Amex card, which he'd loaded in my phone. I was going to Uber to the flat and my brother's friend was going to meet me there.
Right.
But so it was a night train. I'd fallen asleep and I had my pillow in front of me and the conductors came to wake me up and they said, "Where's your ticket?" And I got up, I pulled my phone out of my pocket and I showed them the ticket, went back to sleep. I don't know where I put my phone at that point. I was half asleep.
Probably right in front of you.
No, I think it was down, but it was, I don't know. I got woken up again. "Where's your ticket?" I'm like, "Oh, my phone must have dropped on the floor."
Right.
Gone. It was just gone. And I'm starting to panic now because it wasn't a direct train from Berlin to Amsterdam. There were like two, get off the station, wait an hour, get back.
So you got robbed.
Yeah.
I got robbed. But now I didn't know how to get to Amsterdam.
It's amazing how reliant we are on our phones.
Yeah.
And but the moment they're not there, it's like we're missing a hand.
But it's just like all this organization, like, how am I going to get a hold of my brother? I had the nicest train attendant who's like, "Okay, we're getting off in Stuttgart, which is our town." And then he came with me and went to go report it to the police station.
Yeah.
And he had worked out that from Stuttgart, there's a direct train to Amsterdam. "Oh, I know the driver."
Right.
"And I'm going to get you on that." And
we're
waiting for the police report. This guy's taking forever. And we run to the train station. He's on the phone. He's like, "Hold the train, hold the train." And he gets me on that train to Amsterdam.
Hmm.
I get there, they knew not to ask for my ticket. So I get to Amsterdam at like 7 o'clock and I'm like, "Okay, my brother's only landing at 11. He has no idea that my phone's been stolen."
Yeah.
Do you know where he lives and how you're going to get to his house?
No, I've got his phone number because I managed to get hold of Jess and wrote down. I had his cell number and I had Jess's cell number. That's the only information I had. So I knew he was landing at 11 and I waited for like 4 hours until 11 o'clock and then I went to the information. I'm like, "Can you please call my brother?" Yeah. My brother said, as he landed, the phone rang as he turned it on. He was like, "That's weird." And it was me going, "My phone got stolen." So he just landed. So I had to give him time to like get home, change, and then come pick me up at the train station. And the guy's like, "Oh, you can meet by the grand piano in the hall." So like I went and sat and played piano for 2 hours. Okay. And then, it was...
Meanwhile, back in South Africa, I was like, "Gad's not answering messages."
Oh, right.
Like, and then I direct messaged him because for those who don't know, Gad does all the handwriting on our artworks for all our posts. And then there were direct messages to him and it was just one tick. And I was like, should I be worried?
Yeah.
Then I started messaging you on Facebook. I started messaging Jess. And I was just like, just checking in on Gad. This was like a day or two later. I was like, I'm pretty sure like if it was me, I'd want someone to be checking in on me. Then I realized like I've dealt with your dad before. We've done some stuff together. So let me phone Marcel. And he's like, "Haven't you heard?" And I was like, what happened? And he's like, "No, you got robbed on a train." And I was like, "Fuck. What a Gad problem."
Yeah.
But like, it could have been so much worse. They only took the 15 euros that I had in my wallet.
Right.
They could have taken my passport. They could have
it's funny.
Jeez.
Anyways.
But it was just like sitting in my brother's apartment while he's working. And I'm like, "Do you have a book I can read?"
Yeah, I'm useless now. Yeah.
And all he had was like World According to Gop, so I got like 20 pages into that.
I read Ernest Hemingway on this trip. I wanted to take a very thin, light book.
Yes.
And also, for those who've been following, I've been trying to read the classics.
Mm.
I read, what did I read recently? The Little Prince.
Oh, yes. That's great.
Which is like a book that sort of everyone seems to have read.
Mm.
I somehow missed it. But recently it was like Dune, and we did the big Dune episode. A Streetcar Named Desire, 1984. I'm going through all the classics.
Cool.
Streetcar Named Desire, wasn't that a play?
It's a play.
So did you read the play?
I read the play.
Okay.
Yeah. But Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh,
I read Metamorphosis.
Oh, the Kafka. Yeah?
Kafka, yeah.
Oh, yes, okay.
These are all these like books that were sort of handed to me at certain points in my life, and I was like, yeah, cool, and then I just never read them.
I've got the complete Kafka, and it's just so intimidating.
Jeez. Well, just Metamorphosis was enough for me for now.
Yeah.
But I remember a very cool chick in varsity being like, you got to read this, and I was like, right. I will, and then I didn't.
Yes.
And then it's now you get to it, and you're like, okay, what was that all about?
Yeah.
And you're like, this is incredible. Metamorphosis is awesome.
What are the other classics you have to read? Albert, Catch 22.
Incredible
okay, book. Probably my favorite book ever.
That's on my list.
And Albert Camus, The Outsider. It's also in the same vein as Kafka.
Okay.
But that book literally changed my life.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I could not think about things the same way after reading that book.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shit. All right.
The Cure song, Killing an Arab.
Don't know. Right.
That's a great song. Right. But it's based on...
My memory of The Cure was watching them when they came out. I went to the Cape Town show.
Okay.
And my favorite was a dude who brought his djembe, you know, the little hand drum.
No.
And at one point was like, I'm also going to be a member of The Cure.
No.
And fucking djembe'd for about a song and a half before someone was like, bud.
Yeah, I'll give it a rest.
I've paid a lot of money to see The Cure, not The Cure and you on djembe.
Oh my God.
It's like, what part of you thought that was a good idea? It's the same as we were on this little beach in Sicily and a dude arrived with his little handheld speaker. And we were now going to listen to like Italian hip hop. He had neck tattoos, so I wasn't going to fight him. But I was like, time to fucking leave the beach.
Yes.
Because I don't want to listen to this music. Anyways, I'm becoming a crotchety old man. Speaking of getting old and tired, I think we should call it for the day.
We're going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
Any other special mentions?
I don't think so.
No. Blink Twice, which we spoke about in the previous episode. Tickets are on sale at the Bioscope.
Sick.
Very excited about that.
I'm halfway through the new season of Sweet Home. It's great.
Okay.
Sweet Home.
South Korean horror show.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love that.
We're really enjoying Will Trent.
Oh, okay.
Which I brought up the fact that we'd started. Yes. It's just a good old detective show.
Yeah.
But it's got a bit more to it. It's not as sort of simple.
Nice.
It's a bit more expanded upon, not just episodic.
Okay.
What's Sweet Home about?
It's kind of like a zombie show, but instead of becoming zombies, they become monsters, which are kind of like metaphors for the personality of the people that they take on.
Gosh.
And yeah, there's some monsters that are just completely like far gone as humans, but then there are the super monsters who retain their humanity. And like the government is trying to find a cure, and like all the survivors are holed up in the stadium. Like season one starts off in an apartment.
Yeah.
And it's all focused in there. Season two kind of moves out as they're finding a stronghold.
This is on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah.
Right.
Cool. Sweet Home.
Sweet Home. It's so good.
Okay. Oh. Magic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for a lovely day.
Yep.
And it's nice to catch up. And it's nice to be safe in South Africa and not in an airport.
Yes.
Thank you for listening thus far. And yeah, we'll see you again this Thursday when Nick Hammond is going to pop in.
Right.
Good old radio's Nick Hammond.
Yes.
So that's going to be a good chat. That's going to be this Thursday. And lovely. We'll see you then.
Nice.
Okay. The home base is thevideostore.co.za. Chime in. Let us know what you think about what we've spoken about. And yeah, we'll see you again soon. We'll see you on Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.